XX number 30001, Mr. Peter S., Rear 11. Now, the other thing you had, we're talking about your time with number 7, OTU.
Yes.
Howardon. The other thing you had there was some American pilots. Now, that is quite unusual, that.
Yes.
In the war.
Yes, we had.
Who are these people and what were they doing there?
We had. They were all volunteers from America. They hadn't been in the American Air Force. They'd been crop dusting and doing odd things like that. And I've gave some of them some dual instruction.
Do you remember them?
Yes.
I've got the names here. It's always different to ping. But one of them's Andy Mamadov. I don't know how you pronounce
Andy Mamadov. Yep, I remember.
Was
he like? Here we are, Mamadov. I gave him some dual handling experience with the fairy battle.
And what was he like?
He was an interesting chap because he looked as if he had maybe Spanish or Italian background. He was not a typical looking American. He was more like one of the European type chaps, black hair and he's quite a good chap.
And then there's a Red Tobin.
Oh, Red Tobin. Yes, he's a tall chap. He had red hair, and he was always known as Red Tobin. And
his real name?
His surname was Tobin.
No, I mean the red part. Or was
he? Oh, it's just a nickname.
So he'd been given.
He was always known as Red.
We'll look him up. What was he like?
An amusing chap, a very good chap,
and the third one is Vernon Keog, who had
Shorty Keogh.
Yes, that's
here we are. In here is all about him, and he was
a
pilot officer. Keogh was one of the best known professional stunt parachutists in America. And he was lost. He didn't last very long. He got shot down. He was under 5 feet tall. And he's only a small chap.
So he really was short. I mean,
oh, yes, yes. He was known as Shorty. But he was a professional parachutist. And he claimed to be the smallest pilot officer in fighter command. But he had a good offensive spirit, and he was a good fighter pilot. But he got shot down, and he didn't last very long.
And these were volunteers. I mean, they
yes,
didn't
oh yes,
do the American government.
Yes,
they just come across as volunteers.
Yeah.
Were there many of them, or is this just
the no? As far as I know, at that stage, only these three or four. Count four, I think it was. Mamadov, Keogh.
Haven't got the other name. I've only got. Yeah. They said they were called the Three Musketeers, but I don't know
what that is. Yeah, that's right. There were three of them. Three of them. No, they were. They were good chaps. All volunteers. Been doing. I think most of them. Shorty Keogh had been a professional parachutist. Made many hundreds of jumps for display purposes. And the other two were doing crop dusting, I think.
Now, you do seem to have been engaged in some operational flights. And the first that I can see is on the 14th of August, but there may have been some others. But the 14th of August, you actually shoot somebody down.
Yes.
And this is a crew, you later on get to know the crew, I think, of this aircraft.
Oh, yes, yes.
First operational flight you remember? Well, it may not be the first, but the first where you actually met somebody. The book's a bit scrambled in its time.
Well, I didn't meet them at that time.
I mean, is this the first operational flight where you had a success?
Well, no, because I'd been in France.
No, with 7OTU.
Oh, 7, oh, yes, yes, yes. We used to do patrols.
Now, tell me about the patrols then, first, before we go
on. Well, we used to patrol over Liverpool and Manchester. If sometimes the radar people would get on to our boss and he'd say, we think we've got some aircraft which may be approaching your area, but we don't know, but will you be prepared. So they'd send two aircraft up, flying around at, say, 15,000 feet, whatever, and just waiting there to see if these people approached. Sometimes they did, sometimes they didn't.
Now, was this the first clash in August that you had with them, that you recall? With the bombers?
The first one I had, but there were two other chaps on other patrols other days when they intercepted some aircraft. Excuse me. And I know one was shot down. I don't know whether the other one was. But so these stray aircraft, which were coming up to the northwest of the country, I think were probably thinking they could get away with it, and they didn't think that we would have any fighters in that area because it was away from the east coast. And of course they were aircraft we had at Harden we kept them loaded,
the ammunition loaded.
Oh yes, yeah.
Now what about so tell me what happened in August then. It's the 14th of August.
And yes.
You shoot down a Heinkel 111, I think it is.
That's
tell
right.
Tell me the full story as far as you remember it.
Well, we'd finished flying. You know that in the summer of 1940, they extended the daylight hours by an extra hour. So it didn't used to get dark until about 10:30 or 11. And we'd finished flying at about 8 o'clock that day in the evening, and our aircraft were in the dispersal area, and we walked to our marquee, which was our officers' mess, and just settling down to enjoy a beer, and we heard an aircraft, which was not a Spitfire noise, and an unusual noise, and we dashed out to have a look, and we could see this aircraft flying not too high, only about 2,000-3,000 feet, and it was over the Sealand. Sealand was nearby. It was only about 4 or 5 miles away from Harden. And we saw this aircraft. It was obviously flying in the area of Sealand. We could see it. We identified it as a Heinkel. So it dashed off and got airborne, shot the thing down, and it landed in an old farm, a big field.
What do you remember of the shooting down? I mean, what happened?
Well, there were three of us there, and we all had a go at it. Between the three of us,
were you all instructors?
Oh yes. And
so who went first? Who went first? I think it's Hallings Pot and
McLean. That's right. Hallings Pot was the three of us. He was leading us, and then McLean and myself were each side of him. So, anyway, we went in, and I was the last one to go in, and my final shots, they damaged him. My final shots had actually brought him down. And he made this crash landing, wheels up crash landing, in a big old farm field. And then they were taken prisoners.
Did you actually see it crash land? Did you stay to watch it? Because I presume you could more than the environment.
Yes, we just saw it crash into this, made a wheels up landing in this field. Yes, saw it. And then once we seen it was down, we returned to base.
Where did it land? Somewhere near Stratford, is it?
Yes, not too far from Chester. Shotton, that's right. I'd have to look in the see exactly where it is. Anyway, it's some between Sealand and Chester, in that sort of area.
Now, what happened then? I mean, did you see the? I mean, they'd landed on, of course, up.
Did
you go and visit the aeroplane or the
crew? No, we didn't. Because the crew were the police turned up, the civil police. There was a farmhouse nearby, and the farmyard, they took them into the farmhouse. And they called the police. And they were first to arrive, and then the army arrived, and I think one or two Air Force people arrived. But anyway.
Was there anything with the aircraft left? Or
oh, yes. But they tried to destroy it. When it was on the ground, it was in one piece, apart from the fact they'd made a wheels-up landing. And I've got some photographs of it that show you more. But so what they did, they tried to set fire to it, and they did quite a bit of damage to it. They were able to destroy a part of it, but not all of it.
Yeah. So that was another success for you there. I mean, it was quite notable.
Now, yes.
That was, I think, I'm not sure that was the only one during that part. Now, the other thing is, you used to make visits to London. I was quite interested in that. It said you were caught in the Blitz one day. Now, I think that must be September, because it mentions the Blitz started.
Yes.
It would be September. But the book is scrambled in its order around this Howard and Peter place. Probably for dramatic effect, I suspect.
Yes.
What do you remember about these? Because they were informal trips to London.
Oh, yes. Yes. Sometimes we used to fly down in a ferry battle. Say, four or five of us. We'd go and land at Hendon. Leave the aircraft there and go into town, have a good party, and go back the next day, or might even have two nights there.
What would you do in London? Where would you go? Was there any particular RAF haunts for young officers in town?
Yes, I used to go to a club just off Piccadilly in Prince's Arcade. It was called the... I can't remember the name. It's probably in there. Dear. Anyway, it was in Prince's Arcade. It was a very, very nice club.
What was it like? What was the atmosphere like in there?
Oh,
what did he offer you?
We got to know the owner pretty well. He was, in fact, a South African, and they had a chap playing the piano, very good pianist, playing all the time, and served very good food. It was a very comfortable club, and it was always enjoyable. I always used to enjoy going there. I used to go there quite often.
And it's the liaison club. Now, you were bombed in there, that's why I'm particularly
interested. Yes, well, I got to know one of the two other members of the club quite well, and we used to have quite a few drinks together, and on one occasion there was a raid on London, and they were dropping bombs in the Piccadilly area, and they were coming down fast, so we didn't move, we didn't try and go out to we usually booked in at one of the hotels somewhere, but we didn't move, we just stayed there and spent the night on the sofa. We used the tablecloths to cover ourselves up with, and spent the night there.
But did it worry you, the bombing? Because some pilots, I mean, you know.
No, funnily enough, it didn't. You know, the bombs were dropping fairly close and causing vibrations and bangs and noise. But
next morning, you see much evidence of the damage around the liaison.
Oh yes, yes. I remember just down the road, you know, Prince's Arcade is about 200 or 300 yards from Piccadilly Circus. And there's a church in between, quite a well-known church there. And bombs had gone into the grounds. I say the grounds weren't very big. And did quite a bit of damage to the church. And around about, quite a bit of bomb damage. But, so it was quite close.
Now, another thing, we haven't mentioned the other instructors, actually, but one of them in particular is quite of interest to me anyway, because I've done quite a bit of work on him in the First World War, is Ira Jones, Taffy Jones.
Oh, yes.
Now, what was he like? Because he was a very quite a well-known, high-scoring ace of the Third
World War. Yes, he was. Quite highly decorated.
And what was he like? I mean, as an instructor.
Oh,
he'd flown the SA-5.
He wasn't an instructor.
Right. I've misread that. What was he doing there then?
He was doing administrative work.
Right, because it says among their ranks, but it doesn't mean amongst the ranks of the instructors. It means of the administrative staff of the...
Yes.
So what was he like?
He was a very amusing chap. And we used to get on very well. We used to like his company and being with him. And he used to stutter a bit.
What was his rank at the time?
A squadron leader. And we used to go out. If we were going out for a drink, we used to go into Chester. He often used to come with us. And we would... The two major hotels in Chester at the time, one was called the Blossoms and the other one was called the Grosvenor. And the Grosvenor is the one which is owned by Lord... he still owns it now. Well-known name. Can't remember them. Anyway, we used to go into the Blossoms to start with that. So, you know, and then we go to perhaps to the Grosvenor, but then we would finish up at another place, another pub further down. Once again, I can't remember the name of it. Mine is in the book or not.
It doesn't matter too much.
No.
So it mentions the Blossoms, not the others.
Yes, and I always remember one night we were in there about 7 o'clock, quite early, and we decided to have some champagne. And we're drinking our champagne, and old Taffy pulled out of his pocket a swizzle stick, one of these little metal ones where the prongs, you push it, then leave the prongs come out, and then, you know, you do that to take the bubbles out of the champagne. You've heard of that, expert. So we used to say, and old Taffy used to stutter a bit, he's a Welshman, of course, and we used to say, Taffy, what if taking the using a swizzle stick to take the people who make it take all that time and spend all that money putting the bubbles in, you'll take them all out again? And he said, in his stuttering way, he said it's the only form of fucking exercise I get these days.
Were any of you interested at all in his fighter experience, or scout, it would be called it then, but I mean, because he'd had a lot of experience of formation fighting, and some of the principles coming out of the Sun formation.
Yes, a lot of the World War One tactics.
To him about him?
Oh yes, yes, yeah. He would tell us, you know, how in World War One, because you see, it was only about 20-25 years previously. 1918 up to 1940, and we were very interested to hear what he had to say about his own experiences.
Do you think it had any relevance at all? I mean, the tactics.
Oh yes, in some ways, I suppose there were. I think in those days, rather than flying in, They would go in wide formation, and then it was more of an individualistic effort, rather than we tried to sort of operate as a flight or a squadron. So we tactics changed over the years, of course. But nevertheless, his stories were very interesting.
Would he go on about Manak a lot? That Manak was his flight commander and the well-known First World War ace. He was fairly obsessed with Manak.
I don't remember him going on at all much about.
But a nice old chap. Well, not old, but I mean,
yes, he was old compared with us.
And the other one that's of note that was there, and I think he becomes your squadron commander later on, is Peter Powell. Now, I don't know what rank he'd be at the time.
Well, he was a flight lieutenant. He was my flight commander on the instructing side, and he was a good chap.
What was he like?
Well, he'd been in 111 Squadron, He was a senior to me, of course, but well, he was flight lieutenant then. And he had been in 111 Squadron, which had been based at Northolt. And he's a good chap.
Yeah, you seem to say, you seem to imply in your book that he liked to drink. I don't want to overemphasize this drinks business because I know that's not what you were really doing.
No.
But I mean, there are the odd amusing interludes. The real work is the flying and the
yes.
But,
oh yes.
What about Powell? Did he drink a bit much, or was he?
On the well, we all did on the odd occasion, and he did on the odd occasion too. And
there's an amusing story about Gladstone's bust that yes. I think is worth recording because it's quite a silly story. I mean,
yes, I remember that quite well. We got back from Chester, and we arrived at the castle, and there's a big entrance hall, and then and at the far end from the door was a bust of Gladstone, and old Peter Powell sort of staggered it. He was really a bit boozed that night. And he looked at this bus, and he went...
and punch it.
Well, just knocked it sideways. I just happened to be that side. Just mentioned it. The bus was about that big, on top of a pedestal.
You caught it?
I caught it. Oh, God, I can't think what would have happened if it had fallen to the hard ground and smashed. It would have been a terrible... So I think they removed it after that and put it in a safer place.
One thing I wondered was where you got your petrol from, and there's a bit about that as well. I mean, did you have legal petrol or did you have illegal petrol? You know, or, I mean, because you went back and forth to Chester and other
yes.
places.
What we all used to do, we used to drive up to the bows. We used to drive up to the Bowser and just fill our tanks up.
So aviation fuel?
Yes, because it was a bit heavy.
For did it work?
Oh yes. In the end, everybody was doing it, and the powers that be said not only on our station but on all the other stations. So the powers that be decided they're going to put a stop to it, and they coloured it a sort of pinkish colour, and that came all through your carburetor, and so you could tell straight away if it had been. So we had that stopped us taking it, but then we did get a petrol allowance. We used to get special coupons from the authorities, so that helped a bit.
Now, anything else about your time at Howard and any other incidents you remember? I think you do a parachute course.
Yes.
I was wondering about that. What exactly was it?
It was... I didn't do any jumps. It was to learn how parachutes were packed and to how they were dealt with in the parachute centre. Because then I was made the parachute officer, having done the course. It was a 2-week course at a place called Wheaton, just at the back of Blackpool.
Yeah. So what was the role of the parachute officer?
Well, you had to make sure that the parachute centre on the station was being run properly and the parachutes were being packed as required and dealt with, and they were all stretched out on a long table and they're folded very carefully in a special way, and we had to make sure that they were obeying all the instructions that they had to.
And then while you're in up there in Blackpool area, you also got done for speeding. Now that's a great story because of your response, I think. Do you remember that?
Yes. I had an old square-backed Morris 10. It was a good old car, looked like a tank. But it was okay. I took this car up to Wheaton with me when I went on this parachute course, and because I stayed in the officer's mess at Wheaton, it was okay. And occasionally, you know, I'd pop into Blackpool in the evening just to have a look round, because I had didn't know Blackpool at all well. It was an opportunity to get to know about it. And there was a hotel right on the forefront. Imperial, I think it was called. And I used to put my car in the car park there and go and buy and have a drink. I went in there one night, and there was a chap in the bar who I had known at Gatwick. He wasn't on my course. He was a volunteer reserve and was doing his volunteer reserve training at Gatwick, and I was doing my short service course. And his name was Wick. We called him Wicky. His name was Wickham, I think. And so I was very pleased to see him. I mean, we had quite a few drinks together. And he was up in that area sometimes, so he knew Blackpool pretty well. And after we had a few drinks, he said, there's a nice little nightclub not too far from here. Would you like to come along? So I said, well, yes. So we went along and had a few more drinks and the odd dance or two with some rather nice girls up there. And we just about midnight or thereabouts, we decided to leave to go back, and I was able to give him a ride to pretty well to his place. But that's why he came with me, at least. So, anyway, you know, we both had quite a bit to drink, and I was driving, because in the blackout, and we had, on the headlamps, we had a little sort of grids, and then you just had a horizontal light. You didn't get much forward light, but it gave you a bit. And I was driving along the promenade there, and next thing I knew, there was a car right behind me, and he's flashing his lights. So I pulled up, and this car passed me and went, pulled up in front of me. And it was the police. And I put my window and said, do you know you were doing 60 miles an hour in the blackout? I said, well, I don't think my car will do 60 miles an hour. So he said, well, we reckon you were. I said, oh. So he said, would you come out for a moment? He opened the door and I almost fell out. And he then wanted to see my driving license and all the documents that I could produce. But, so that was it.
And drunken driving, which presumably you were, by the limit anyway, I mean, you may have been still competent, but I mean, wasn't an offence then, I don't think.
So no.
You haven't done anything wrong there. It was a speeding.
No. Yes, it was a speeding. And I was,
do you think you had done 60?
No. I was going too fast, obviously. But I don't, as I told you, I don't think the car would do 60. And I was taken to court and for speeding, nothing about being under the influence. And at Harden, so I went back to Harden after the parachute course, and I got a ticket that I was being sued for speeding. Well, we had a barrister who was a ground staff officer at Harden, and he said, I'll come and defend you. So I said, okay. So we flew up there in a Miles Master, landed at Blackpool Airport, and had to get a taxi into the court in Blackpool. But there's been a hold-up and getting a taxi, one thing or another. By the time we got to the court, my case had been heard. And they said, you've been fined £5. £5 was quite a lot of money then. So my barrister chap said, we were held up, unfortunately, and told them why. And they said, all right, they reopened the case. And they reduced the fine to £3.